driving, feeling hip to my car. I drive around a bit cause work isn't very far. I call my phone and I check my messages, but I don't have any messages. All I know, driving on drugs feels better when they're prescription. All I know, the world looks beautiful, the world looks so damn beautiful. I feel fantastic, and I never felt.
Hello and welcome back, or welcome to Tomfoolery. I'm not going to presume that you've been here before. I, of course, am Cody Melcher.
And I am Runjit Sowry.
How are you doing, Runjit?
Pretty good. How are you today?
Yeah. This book hasn't ruined your life for the rest of
it
your life?
It kind of did, actually. Yeah. It kind of did.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
This was the first book that we've done that I hated.
Oh man, yeah. I don't know. I got pretty close on Chesterton sometimes.
But
he kept it whimsical.
Yes.
There was a lot less whimsy in this book, I'll say that much.
I think there was negative whimsy.
It sucked the whimsy that was already existent in the world. Is that what you're trying to postulate? Yeah. Just for clarification, in case you all can't read, or you're confused and stumbled upon this in some sort of drunken stupor, which could happen. Podcasts are popular when you're drunk. We are talking about The Pink Swastika, written by Pastor Scott Lively, with help from Kevin Abrams, some guy he met on the street, I'm sure. It is a book. Let me just read the back of my copy. I have the second edition copy, and we'll talk more about differences in editions later. This is from Dr. Howard Hurwitz of the Family Defense Council, so you know that that's a reputable group. The Pink Swastika, Homosexuality in the Nazi Party, is a thoroughly researched, eminently readable, demolition of the gay, and that's in quotes, by the way, just in case anybody's confused, myth symbolized by the pink triangle that the Nazis were anti-homosexual. The deep roots of homosexuality in the Nazi Party are brilliantly exposed. And I think that's a pretty good encapsulation of what's going on in this book, right, Runjit?
That's a very good summary.
It's succinct.
Yes.
And that's why I like it. Yeah, well, without further ado, let's go ahead and introduce our special guest for today. You know her from her hilarious exports both at Cole's Open Mic all over Chicago. She does Double Shot Showcase in Evanston with, spoiler alert, me as well, and our also co-host, Peter John Burns. She's doing a lot of stuff. I don't even want to list it all because it would take too long, but let's go ahead and introduce Ms. Chris Simmons. Say hi, Chris.
Hi, thank you.
How are you today?
Good. I'm cheerful despite it all.
I'm glad that we're keeping our hope alive during this dark time of the pink swastika, that we are able to rise above it.
So this book brought you down too, Chris?
Yes, and I think it took me a day or two to realize, I'm having such a terrible week. Why is it? Oh, it's that book Cody made me read.
It was Cody's call, it was this book.
It's from my private collection, because I was a rhetoric major and I collect these types of books. But for just as my defense, it is my goal in life to spread ennui throughout the world. And so I think I did a very good job, at least with two people.
Well, I did wonder. No, I did wonder. And I thought, are we going to talk about this? Why Cody wants to read this? And you had explained about studying rhetoric and the nature of the selection. But for you to read this, did it hurt more? I mean, knowing that there are people who not only have these beliefs but want to publish them and recruit others to their beliefs, talk about your mood while reading it. I'd be so interested.
I mean, yeah. Do I get upset? Yes. Does it send me into some sort of catastrophic thing? No, because I mean, as a stand-up comedian, I kind of encountered the same thing on my material, you know, and I've even encountered the same thing in terms of homosexual material, both that I do and that other people do, in terms of anti-homosexual material that I've seen in Chicago. So you have to do the thing that you're not supposed to do, which is to other them, in the way that like we did with communists in the 50s. They're misguided idiots, and I can't, you know, if I woke up in the morning and worried about every idiot in America, I'd never get anything done. And you know, We started off with a very high note. But
well,
I guess this
well,
book,
as I
guess
learned
this book
that I am
rough.
A homosexualist, and it wounded yes. me as a homosexualist.
Yes, and
it was hurtful to me.
And for those of you who have not yet read the book, at the beginning of the book, Kevin Abrams, who to an absurd level reintroduces the fact that he is Jewish several times in that kind of "I'm allowed to say this because I'm Jewish" way, he explains what a homosexualist is in the beginning of the book, which is a person who helps further the cause of the quote-unquote gays politically and societally. So his example is that a gay person and Bill Clinton are both homosexualists because Bill Clinton, quote-unquote, tried to force the military into accepting open homosexuals into service, which is funny considering that's not even how that went down at all. but, you know, whatever. I'll let him have that definition.
Runjit, did you find any terms for yourself in this book?
Homosexualist.
I'm glad we're all homosexuals.
So I'm coming out of the closet, guys. Yeah. I'm a homosexualist.
Guys, you heard it here first. That's a scoop.
I'm not a pederast.
No.
Which is another term that they took great care to define.
Yes,
for
because
no
you need
real
to be
reason,
sure.
though.
Yeah. Well,
no, you know what?
There is a reason.
No, but they didn't. And then they used it interchangeably with homosexuality.
That's what I mean by
yes,
when I said
that's
no
why
reason.
There was that reason.
They take great care to define each one and be like, at the beginning, it's like a Venn diagram.
Well,
this is
want...
not this. But then during the book, they use pederast and homosexual.
Well, because yes. the difference is they want you to know that you can be pro-homosexual but without being you yourself a homosexual. And by homosexual, they mean someone who sleeps with boys. Like little boys, because that's in that religious right circle, and he mentions that in the preface, there is no difference between a child molester and a homosexual. Although I'm glad that they at least did the definition difference between pederast and pedophile. that was fun, I guess.
Yeah.
I thought, Chris, when your question started that you were going to ask me, I thought you were going to Freud me. Because you were like, I was wondering why Cody was reading this book, and I thought you were going to ask, like, what dark troubles are you dealing with in which you seek out books that are written like this?
Well,
It was embedded in the question?
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, why do you hate yourself so?
Because it had a pretty cover. You all don't have
it
the
does.
Cover,
it
but
is.
it's got some nice good block lettering there. Yeah, I actually don't even know how I learned about this book. I think I read about it in another book. And then I went on a shopping spree because I also bought Shadow in the Land and some other books about homosexuals destroying America. I actually own a first edition copy of Homosexuality by Dr. Bieber. That's from the 50s. That is the book that started the concept that a homosexual is from a distant father and an overbearing mother. It's a quote unquote psychology book on that.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll jump into the book in a minute, Chris. If I may, Freud you. We were introducing you, and mm-hmm. then you jumped in and introduced the book. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
This is so unlike what I normally read for pleasure, and I think that I only read for pleasure because my day job is reading. I'm a copy editor, and when I read for pleasure, it's fiction almost entirely. And
so, like, what kind of fiction do you read, though?
Well, I've always, I would say, since graduating from college, made very deliberate choices about my reading because I was very offended not to have more literature by women in my curriculum. So for about 8 or 10 years, I read nothing written by a man because I thought I had so much ground to cover to make up for not having read enough women. In school, in high school and college, I was never taught Virginia Woolf. I was never taught Edith Wharton. I had never read these things until I just started choosing them for myself. And so discovering Margaret Atwood felt like a revelation.
Oh, yeah.
I read everything that she has published. Patricia Highsmith, who coincidentally I thought about a lot while reading The Pink Swastika. And lately I've moved on to try different things. And one of my favorite books I've read lately is a recently published noir detective fiction called The 20-Year Death by Ariel S. Winter. It's probably my favorite thing I've read in the last couple of months.
Did you study English, Chris?
I study political science.
Oh, poli-sci. Okay. What did you, if I may, what did you want to do with that? What was your plan during college?
Educate myself.
So you just wanted to do it. It was a liberal arts major
exactly,
for you.
Exactly. Interesting. I didn't have a career path in mind.
Interesting. So do you like have any? Do you have any genres that you're particularly fond of,
no,
or is
I don't think
you
so.
Just like to explore?
I think it's probably enjoying the darkness of Patricia Highsmith that kind of led me down the road to noir fiction. I just like to explore. Oh, and I should mention that I no longer exclusively read women, and in recent years, yeah. Well, in recent years, I've really enjoyed Dennis Johnson and Juno Diaz.
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, I would have felt terrible if you were still only reading women in the first book that I made you read, written by a man.
Oh, I wouldn't have. No, it actually was a problem. I started a book group with a woman when I lived in San Francisco, and the very first book the group chose was written by a man. I couldn't read it.
Oh,
I was
wow.
part of a book group
wow.
and chose not to read any books that were chosen that were by me.
You know what's...
What was I, a brat? Was this some kind of petulance? Yeah, I'll be in a book group. No, I'm not reading that.
You know what's so funny, though, is that that whole sentence, I'm sure you're not the first person who's ever said that who's lived in San Francisco. I started a book group with a woman in San Francisco, and the first book was written by a man, so I couldn't read it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure you're not the only person in San Francisco who's said that sentence before.
Yeah, those were my San Francisco. That was my San Francisco face.
You need to wear a long scarf and throw it over your shoulder when you say that. Well, okay. I'm glad that you've expanded. I'm glad that I didn't force this on you. That'd have been terrible.
Let's just say this podcast would have been short.
Yeah. I could have told you that Scott Lively was a woman. Like, I guess I could have worked out.
Yeah, it was a pseudonym Lively. Because yeah.
Her name's Scotty. Scotty Lively. Oh man, that'd have been fun and horrifying at the same time.
I have to say, guys, this is the first book of the ones we've read. Where I would actually tell the listener, don't read it.
Oh, no.
I recommend you not read it. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You can...
You'll get what you need from this.
Yeah, I honestly, because this isn't a fiction book, I kind of agree. But at the same time, because we're also talking about book exploration, mm-hmm. Arm yourself with knowledge. I'm not an atheist, but I've read the Bible several times over because I think the smart move when somebody says something to you is to not go, oh, well, I've never read that before. I have no idea what you're talking about anyway, because then you're going to start trusting their opinion on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, you don't want people to come up to you and start, you know, not that they have, I can't imagine this book taking off in popularity considering it hasn't since 95, but you know, you don't want somebody to come to you and be like, well, Hitler was a homosexual, and you go, was he now? And then you move on with your life, you know, that you want to be able to know what they're talking about and what misinformation they've been fed
themselves. And I did once feel that way when I was in school and studying political science in a southern state. And mm-hmm. extremely socially liberal. I listened to Rush Limbaugh to know what the other side was saying.
Oh, yeah.
I did feel it was important to know.
Yeah, I believe that too. In fact, yeah. I listen to a lot of conservative talk radio, which I completely disagree with most of it.
But it's fun.
I guess in the case of this book,
they know pomp and circumstance.
In the case of this book, reading it was. Real chore.
If we get chore. Let me say this.
Yeah.
I will say this. If we get enough ratings, because we're going to talk about this at the end of the podcast, we want you to rate the podcast on iTunes. Mm-hmm. If we get enough ratings or if we get enough requests on Facebook, I will record an audiobook version of this book.
Oh,
of me reading
no,
the book
no.
so that you may listen to that instead of having to read it yourself. And I'll even, if we get enough votes for it this way, I will even do it in impersonations just to make it more fun for you. So offer. That is my offer to you at a limited time.
That is awesome.
For the month of October. Just let me know. I'm going to have a lot of free time.
I hope that that comes to pass.
Yes. So just let us know. Chris is.
Oh, it makes my stomach hurt.
You're not having to do it. It's fun for me.
It's fun for me.
I once did an audiobook version of the Unabomber's Manifesto as Christopher Walken. That was fun.
Ooh, that does sound fun.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm totally cool doing this. but let's get into the book, shall we? Ranjit, what was your favorite part of reading this book?
Well, I mean, there were a few things that struck me. I don't know whether I'd say favorite, but there were a few things that struck me about the book. One thing is the idea that they, in this book, these two guys, basically, let's talk about the thesis of the book. I know we mentioned it briefly.
Right.
But
and this is all basically in the introduction done by Kevin Abrams.
Right. And, you know, you guys can help me tweak this if I'm slightly off.
Oh, of course.
The thesis of the book is basically that the Nazi movement at its roots was kind of a homosexual movement. You know, that many of the founding Nazis were homosexual, and the root of it was homosexuality. That's right. Kind of the basic thesis of the book, right, guys? Can you correct that a little bit, or?
Not to get rhetorically nitpicky.
Yeah, no, do.
But the thesis of the book would be that homosexuals are attempting to compare the homosexual plight in the Holocaust to the plight of the Jewish people in the Holocaust, mm-hmm. to use that as capital in order to gain political ground.
Yes.
And that their argument is fallacious because even though homosexuals died during the Holocaust, the Nazi Party was itself a homosexual movement. As a basis, their thesis is just ridiculous. Because, even as a homosexual, well, first of all, you're comparing numbers. Like, because their argument is that that 13,000 homosexuals were killed during the Holocaust, and that that's nothing like what happened to the Jewish people. Well, yeah, no one's disputing that there were more Jewish people killed, but the point is people killed and people killed. Like, that's – I don't think there are homosexuals that ever try and compare – I've never heard an argument from a homosexual person that tried to compare Jewish people and gay people in the Holocaust – as being like indifferent in some way.
Yeah, and just to kind of piggyback on what you said about the thesis of the book, have either of you guys read one of the other books by this guy? Cody, you might have read this, by Scott Lively. I forget what it's called. He wrote another book.
No, I haven't read his other
book. One of the chapters of his other book is called How American Gays Are Stealing the Holocaust. And he refers to it. He says, for more information about that, read my other thing, How American Gays Are Stealing the Holocaust, which is kind of what you're saying about the thesis of this book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, they want to combat what they see as gays using victim status as a political tool.
Yeah.
And I believe they wrote this book in response to a ballot measure in Oregon, and I don't know how involved they were with this political measure, but they wanted to make it a constitutional amendment that gay people could not be a protected status, or that there could not be. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know vaguely what you're talking about. Yeah, that's a measure that comes up a lot, actually.
Well, they wanted to make sure that in Oregon, no laws could be passed protecting the status, them a minority, protecting against discrimination. They wanted to actually make it law that, no, you can't.
Right. That was the counter argument to the hate crime law.
They wrote this book as a response saying, look, gay people are terrible. They're terrible. They're not the victims you think they are. They're actually the terrible people.
Right. And Scott Lively was very involved with that. I did little bit of research on that. And the group doing that was called the Oregon Citizens Alliance. And Scott Lively was a higher up in that organization. So he was kind of at the lead of doing this.
And continuing the hate group notion of we need to name our groups things that homosexuals aren't allowed to be or have. Citizens, family, love, those are the words that are always in those organizations. And I always find that hilarious that they're the Oregon citizens, but then there are these homosexuals who are just there. They just happen to reside in Oregon. Yeah, Scott Lively's got a very strong history of political activity, including he was part of the and I spoke about this recently on Peter John Burns' podcast. He was part of the Uganda Kill the Gays bill. That's he flew right. over right. to Uganda to help them push that one through, because that's an important political measure we need to make sure of.
Now, to his credit. To his credit.
What?
Okay. Listen. Hear me out here,
good.
Guys.
Yeah, no, I'm
to
listening.
To his credit, after there was a big backlash to the Kill the Gays bill in Uganda, Scott Lively came out with some kind of statement that said, basically, okay, maybe they shouldn't be killed. So, if you take out the killing part, I'm in support of this measure. Now, the other part, the only other part other than the killing part, this basically is a bill that authorizes capital punishment for gays in Uganda.
Yes, yes.
If the other part of it is, if we don't kill them, we'll imprison them for life. So
yay.
after the big backlash, he's like, okay, killing maybe a little too much. Imprison them for life. Imprison the gays for life.
I like, Ranjit, that you're... let's give him credit. He's at least really good at walking back years of work when he finds out that it's displeasing to a large number of people. It's like, all right, touché to him.
And I don't think we mentioned this. He actually maybe you did. He actually flew over there. Did you say that?
Yeah,
he flew
over
there before this.
He spent a lot of time there.
And spoke in front of like thousands of people to get this thing going. And
he
that's
met with
what,
legislators to help them craft the
yes,
bill.
Yes, exactly.
So he's just very good at working back years of work. So that's bravo for him, I guess.
I guess we couldn't possibly have time to understand why a man has evidently taken this on as his life's mission to, not even in his own country, to go to other countries to try to promulgate laws that demonize and discriminate against a part of the population that you would think he could just live and let live.
Well, you know what? It's easier pickings there. Yeah, here's a quote from the introduction to the book. It says, "This book will show that, given its present course and left unchallenged, America could easily become the Nazi Germany of 50
yes.
years ago."
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That's kind of a through
yes.
line throughout this book, is that, well, the homosexuals did this over there in Germany in the 1920s and 30s. And look what's happening now. Gays are fighting for rights here. They're going to turn America into Nazi Germany.
Because they hate families.
Right.
They
right.
hate families. And that's also why they hated Jews.
Yeah.
Because Jewish people use the unit of the family to thrive in society over the years, and these gays, which, by the way, you already noted, always in quotes, the word gay, always in quotes.
Every time.
Because he
book.
Wants to make it clear that gay is a political movement, not an actual thing.
Right.
Because, I mean, he also quotes, there's a psychiatrist that he quotes who says that he's never met an innate homosexual.
Yes, he did quote, yes.
So gay is a thing that one puts on, not that one is. Gay is the same thing as being a Republican or a Democrat mm-hmm. in this system, which is also hilarious. Because I used to be in political talk radio. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that on the podcast. And I was with a Republican and a Democrat on the same radio show. And then I was a moderate non-party member who kind of was also calling everybody out on their bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
The Republican on that show at one point, if he's listening, hi Tony. At one point we were having a conversation. I don't remember if it was on air or off air. And he basically alluded that no matter where he was born, if he was born out of America or in America, he would always be a Christian. That, like, he was born
wow.
Christian.
Huh.
But yet he did not believe that people were born homosexual.
Wow.
It's the same kind of thing. We're not a persecuted class. The Christians are a persecuted class. Mm-hmm. We're not born gay. People are born Christian.
That's interesting. I've never heard a Christian claim to be born Christian before.
Have you talked to these types of Christians?
I don't.
Because, like, I don't
no.
want to. Like, for clarification on the podcast, I don't want to group all of Christianity
no,
into
you're
this
right.
because I know plenty of fantastic Christians. Some of my best friends are Christian. And so I don't want the Christians out there to think that we are persecuting them.
No, but the entire premise of being Christian is that you have chosen, you have accepted Christ as your Savior.
Exactly.
That is a step that you must make.
Exactly.
That is a
right.
choice
yeah.
you make.
You're
not
Jewish.
Born that way. You're born a sinner.
yeah.
Yeah.
You're born Jewish.
Yeah,
you know.
Or a sinner. And and
Jewish or a sinner.
So you accept that Christ has died for your sins, and that's what makes you a Christian. You might be born in a country where there's a greater chance of you learning how to be a Christian. I don't understand.
Well, I think that's the whole idea of like born again Christian, isn't it? Is that you've been born again as a Christian, but then there's still that usage of the term born.
Yeah. Oh.
You're reborn in Christ.
Yes.
Ooh.
Okay. Well,
I feel like we need to like call like a doctor of theology and bring them in here. We need to have like a panel of experts.
Regardless, something that was very important in this book is homosexuals aren't victims and they can't claim a moral equivalency to the Jews. And that's something that, just because some homosexuals died in these camps too doesn't mean that they're as much a victim as Jewish people are.
Actually, if I may.
You may.
I also want to give Scott Lively and Kevin Abrams credit, and maybe I missed
Stop
it.
Stop doing it! You guys no. are giving them credit!
I want to give them
Don't
credit.
Don't give them credit!
For at least in the introduction, not saying that sure, homosexuals died, but they also die from AIDS all the time. I want to give them credit for never saying that comparison.
Were you waiting for that? Any page
I'm
now, they're going to bring up AIDS.
For that. Are
they're
going to
bring up
me?
AIDS! They're going to bring up AIDS!
I hear that on stage in comedy more than I heard it in this book. So at least that's something.
Yeah.
And maybe it was just because it was 95. I don't know. But I want to say one of my favorite parts that they talk about in the introduction, just because I'm still stuck in the introduction, because I also think that encapsulates most of the argument is in that intro. The rest of it's just kind of research.
So let me amend my earlier statement.
Yes.
Read the introduction. Read the introduction.
No, I'm talking about like the preface and everything too. That's too much. You were saying, I thought you were asking me to read it on the air. I was like, all right, here we go.
No, I just mean instead of don't read the book.
I want to condemn Kevin Abrams. The co-author of this book.
Chris, this is for you.
For not using the word ironically appropriately. He uses it in the beginning of the preface, and I'm pretty sure that is not an appropriate usage of the term ironic. So shame on you, Kevin Abrams. I hope that you sleep poorly tonight.
Also, they need to learn the difference between it's with an apostrophe and without.
Ooh.
Don't even start
Chris
on this.
Chris is a copy editor. This book must have drove you nuts.
My favorite.
Oh no, because I was reading this book for pleasure.
My favorite part here is it must be clarified. It must be. This is from the preface. The Nazis were not right-wing conservative creationists. Mm-hmm. They were left-wing Darwinian evolutionary socialists. So therefore, we're all the same people. As a principle, an increase in pederasty and homosexualism parallels a militaristic Hellenic revival. History discloses that the most warlike nations are those whose male leaders were the most addicted to sexual relations with young boys. So, in that, several argumentative fallacies. Mm-hmm. First of all, you have grouped a large number of people together, as this whole book has done. This whole book is just about grouping a small number of people and making them the leaders of a large cause. The same thing happened on my radio show during our Christmas special. The Republican called me a pedophile to my face on air because he
said... Tony.
Hi, Tony.
Hi, Tony. Because he said that... the leader of NAMBLA was a homosexual leader, and they were arguing to lower the age of consent, and therefore, because he was a homosexual leader, that meant that he spoke for the homosexual party. And I was like, oh, so Fred Phillips speaks for all Christians then, because he is a Christian leader. He leads Christians.
Right. Yeah.
And so therefore he speaks for all of Christians. So there's that problem. There is the fallacy that, he makes a statement that history discloses that the most warlike nations are those whose male leaders were most addicted to sexual relations with young boys. Does not provide any research, any backup, not even a reference to what he's talking about. He mentions Hellenic, so obviously he's talking about like the Alexander the Great Macedon Greek Empire, but he offers no proof into Alexander the Great with young boys. I guess he means the Spartans as well, possibly. That one, that is true. But there's also no reference to what makes them the most warlike. Because, I mean, if we're talking about that period, then you're not even talking about Persia. Mm-hmm. You're not even talking about areas outside of that area, like China or Japan or any of the Western empires. Rome.
No, there's an entire hemisphere that is not taken to an account.
Exactly.
In any other historical
And that's only in that time period. Mm-hmm. If you want to talk about the most warlike, let's talk about Genghis Khan and the Mongol Empire. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure, and I may be wrong, I haven't done a lot of research in the Mongols, but I don't think that they had pederasty. Also, that logical fallacy, what I was talking about earlier, where he basically compares homosexuals and pederasts. That was all grouped in the same thing.
You know, Runja quotes from the introduction and the preface, and we read what they are going to prove to us. We read every theory that they are going to back up with evidence, and then I kept waiting for this evidence in each subsequent chapter. The evidence that the Nazi party was not just harboring a few homosexuals, but was chiefly homosexuals. The ties between the occult and homosexuality, and how the entire movement grew out of, well, the anti-family nature of homosexuals.
Yeah.
I was waiting for the proof, and it was couched in such language as to be laughable, which I think led to a lot of these reviews we saw on Amazon.
Yeah. Well, I just pulled up one of my favorite quotes from the book.
Oh, good.
Okay. They're talking about this guy named Von Eberstein, who was one of the Nazis, and here's the quote. Outside of his involvement with the early SA, we have little evidence to conclude that Von Eberstein was homosexual, but we strongly suspect that he was.
Yes.
Period.
That was exact construction.
Yeah,
saw over and over again.
I like to make up my own rhetorical devices in terms of like the names that I give certain rhetorical devices that I see in modern politics, because there are names for them, but I don't care to remember any of them. That is an example of two different types of ones that I like, that I call the and the I'm just gonna leave this here on the table.
Right.
So it's like, so he's a homosexual. You know, we don't know if he's a homosexual, but he did hang out a lot in a neighborhood that had a homosexual in it. I'm just gonna leave this here on the table.
I love quotes like that. The book was full of them, and when they talked about the destruction of the Sex Institute, this is in chapter 5 in our edition, the fire and all of the documents that were burned. What went up in smoke can never be known, but quote, we can be sure they contained many Nazi secrets. We can be sure of that.
We can never know, but we can be sure.
Never be known, but we can be sure. So this kind of construction is very frustrating.
Unlike,
and also, yes.
Unlike the trains, the evidence never ran on time.
Oh, nice. Nice. Here's yet another example, Cody, of that same Cody-named fallacy. Okay. This is when they're equating fascism with like homosexuality.
Of course.
Kind of connecting the two. Yeah.
We like leather.
Here's the sentence, exact quote. Although it may be mere coincidence, we are reminded that the Latin root of fascism is fasces, F-A-S-C-E-S, which means, quote, a bundle of rods, unquote.
No, wait, you guys, this is so interesting. No, this is great because actually this, no, I haven't even watched that many episodes of the TV show Louis, but I recently did see one from the first season. Do you remember? Mm. They're sitting around a poker table.
I have a stand-up bit about this.
Okay, and he asks the one gay man in the room, hey, yes, does it bother you when I use faggot? And he explains about when faggots were burned in the time that witches were also burned.
Yes.
Witches were burned at the stake, but the story he tells is that homosexuals, they didn't even want to waste a stake burning them. They would burn them with the bundles of sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the pejorative came from. So reading, then I happened on that talking about the Latin root of fascism and tying it to this pejorative. And I found this so interesting it's that complex where you hear an idea and then it seems to come back at you over and over again.
Yeah. The funny thing about that, though, is that fascism's existed as a word longer than like faggot for a homosexual has.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I doubt anybody, when they coined the term faggot for homosexual, was like, hey, let's make this a clever play off of the term fascism.
Guys, no, we need to start calling these
sticks faggots, Cody, so that later when we throw homosexuals on them, it'll be a clever word of turn of phrase.
Cody, I'll bet they did.
I bet. We can never know for sure if they did run shit, but they probably definitely did.
There's no evidence, but
I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
But
there's no evidence, but I have a very strong conviction that it happened.
But yeah, probably.
I'm just going to leave this here on the table.
The other thing let's give credit to these guys, Chris.
Right now, they are 3-1.
They're looking pretty good on this podcast.
I know. We
surprisingly
should call
them. This is
going to be a
big
upset. This is the liberal problem. We're trying to see the other side.
But really, let's see the other side.
They do quote William Shirer from his book The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, which is like one of the most respected and revered scholarly books about the Holocaust and about the Third Reich.
Right.
And then they also quote Elie Wiesel's Night.
Yeah, I know. I was really right. I wonder if Elie Wiesel knows that. Because that might be a pro. Like, I would be upset.
Yeah, and then they also quote another great book about the Holocaust, Primo Levi, Survival in Auschwitz. So they quote some amazing books in here.
I mean, like, to give them credit again, they do a very good job of dealing with Jewish people of the Holocaust. They treat them very tenderly.
Here's one sentence I really liked. It should by this time be apparent to the reader that lesbians did not have a major part to play in Nazism. So I got that fact from
because
the
they're
book.
Women.
Well, very early on, I thought, why is this the book that I've been invited to discuss? I'm a girl, and there's no girls in here. Not even straight
Our last
ones.
Book, well, too, Cody, had no girls in it, really.
We commented on that.
Yeah.
If I had known that you once disbanded a literary group in San Francisco over it, then I would have... I was actually, when you were talking about that, I was like, oh, we should have read the Scum Manifesto with you. That would have been good. But yeah.
No, it's hard. But you know what? And guys, I do not want to give this book any credit.
But she's going to.
But no, I don't.
4-1.
I did go in thinking there's no way I'm going to be able to see anything in these arguments. I come with my own agenda, which is of course exactly what they believe of homosexualists, that we're not going to hear the truth that they have uncovered.
Right.
Which I'm trying to use a tone that suggests I am putting air quotes around the truth they've uncovered. And there's no way. So the only thing I was going to feel when reading this was a sadness and a sickness in my stomach. There were two pieces of things I was glad to learn from the book. Tiny little pieces that I, of course, could have learned on Wikipedia. But... how do you feel about that? Reading this book, what attitude did you bring that was going to affect your
reading?
I'm
interested in what the two things
were. That's what we want to know. What are the two things?
They mention an organization early in the history that they discuss called the Scientific Humanitarian Committee.
Yes.
And they mention that in 1914 it was the largest gay rights organization. It had 1,000 members and then it grew on. Mm-hmm. And when I looked up that committee, it was founded in 1897. It was considered the first such organization in history, the first gay rights organization in history. And I found that really interesting. I didn't know about
Berlin,
the Scientific Humanitarian
Committee. In Germany, I mean, if you've ever seen Cabaret or read Christopher Isherwood, Berlin.
Or read Patricia Highsmith, frankly. Yeah.
But Berlin during that time period was very not open, but I mean it was still kind of an underground culture. I mean, to some extent it still is today. But it was very if you read any Isherwood, and I only spotlight Isherwood just because it's so extensive the amount of involvement that he had. And that's what was funny about reading this book is that the Nazi Party, especially if you read Isherwood in the 60s and things like that, is what came in and broke up all of that activity. If you read, like, Cabaret is all about the Nazi Party coming in and destroying homosexual culture. And I guess they would argue that they were destroying femme culture, not homosexual culture.
Well, they would also argue
culture.
That they only started doing that when it became politically necessary to do so.
Well, yes, because that's all so Hitler ever did was anything politically necessary.
Right.
Well,
they were so tolerant. Hitler knew everyone was gay all along, he didn't start getting rid of them until he had to for political reasons.
Well, and they would also argue that the Nazis were doing that to protect their own homosexual secrecy.
They
didn't want people to know they were a homosexual movement.
They were on the down low.
So they crushed homosexualism.
Yeah.
Especially the feminine ones.
Okay, so if I may, let's flip this switch.
Oh?
So the reason that they were killing people was because they wanted to protect their own homosexuality because they didn't want people to know they were homosexuals. Is this not an argument for allowing and accepting homosexuals because then they wouldn't be killing people in Holocaust? Because if that's their main impetus is to protect the fact that they're homosexual because they didn't want people to know that, that's the same thing like when kids kill themselves or, you know, get involved in bad things because they're trying to hide it.
Right.
That's where risky behavior comes from when you're a young homosexual, is you're trying to hide it, and therefore it happens. Same thing with, like, drinking. Mm. Like, the argument about, when you tell your children you're not allowed to drink and, like, completely shut down everything that they try to do, all they're going to do is be riskier about it because they're going to have to sneak behind your back.
Hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Hmm.
That's really interesting. I never thought about it that way.
It's a crazy argument, obviously.
I never thought about the point,
but that's
though.
I like that. That's a fun rhetorical stance to take on it.
Yeah.
But to your point, Chris, about like your going into the book with your preconceived notions,
mm-hmm.
that is a weird thing for me sometimes when I read this book as a gay person, especially if it's like late at night when I'm just like kind of tired and I'm just sitting there reading it. Because every once in a while I'll get this weird feeling where it's like, well, I guess I can't prove that it's not just like, and I'm going to probably get hate mail about this. I guess I can't really, like, personally, and I'm sure there's more science to it. I'm not a science person. I can't really personally prove that it's not just an aberration of, you know, heterosexual, like, love.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't prove that it's not a psychological disorder.
Mm-hmm.
I can't prove that. Like, you know, I can't prove that I don't really have depression or anything like that. Like, I have Tourette's and OCD. Who knows? I can't prove that. And so my real only argument to that in those time periods when I'm reading this and things like that is like, well, but it's not hurting anyone to allow that. You know, just like me having OCD gets annoying for people, sure. Because I have to organize everything, or I'll call over a waitress and tell her that, or a server and tell her that, like a picture on the other side of the restaurant has, you know, shifted slightly, and she may want to fix it if she'd like to. You know, that's annoying for certain people because she doesn't care as much about that OCD as I do. She doesn't care if the picture on the wall is like that. I care. And what does it hurt you? If I care about that. Now, if I'm forcing you to go fix the picture, then that's me forcing you to have a gay marriage. But who's it hurt if I go over and fix the picture?
Yeah, well, that gets to the whole idea of recruitment.
Yes.
You know,
which is also funny because that's what they're trying to do.
Exactly.
Too.
Right?
Yes, exactly.
That's the funny thing. People that cry out about recruitment, I get recruited once a week by Christians trying to make me a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hilarious to me that they get upset when we, quote unquote, are recruiting people, which we're not.
Right.
Right.
Like, you don't recruit homosexuals. That's not a thing. You can recruit homosexualists
mm-hmm.
because you can recruit straight people into, like, supporting gay people in a loving way. Like, that is technically a recruitment strategy. But that's not really even recruitment. It's ridiculous.
That you bring your belief to this book, and there's language that is always going to make me cringe. They refer to people when someone became a homosexual. And that's when he became a homosexual. Oh, man.
I was in high school
just
when I became a homosexual.
Verb C, really. There's just the use of that verb. That's a paragraph that I'm going to discount. There's a chapter there that's going to make no sense to me because there's a baseline level of beliefs that
right.
we absolutely do not share.
Right.
I would like to know your thoughts on essentially outing historical figures in people who aren't around anymore. And what they tried to do was say, well, it wasn't said any, or reportedly homosexual, or we think he was a pederast because of this, or it was said there was an orgy. These kinds of points of view that you can bring up and describe about people who aren't around anymore. What are your thoughts on this? Discussing whether Abraham Lincoln might have been gay to further your cause or to
discredit another
cause. That's a
really interesting question, Chris, and I don't have a simple response to it, you know? Because certainly trying to learn the truth about people who are no longer here, totally valid. The problem is that that kind of thing is often used, I think, disingenuously, mm-hmm. you know, by people who want to make a specific point. And that's what's happening in this book. Mm-hmm. It's like they're coming into it not really sincerely as a search for truth, but more right. as we have this agenda we're trying to push. And it helps us to say that all these list of Nazis were gay.
Right. It's agenda first. That's the fun thing about gay history is that, like, because nobody was really out, you just kind of have to speculate about people.
Yeah.
You know?
You can say, well, what if this? Then we look at everything in a different context. The things right. that happened and the decisions that were made. What if this? But can we ever really know? Can we even really know that Abraham Lincoln wasn't gay?
Right.
Or, yeah, this
and
kind
and
of
also
thing.
People discount bisexuality a lot in
oh,
those capacities.
Absolutely,
as well.
Absolutely. There's a polarity there. It's this way or that way, and yeah.
Let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and let's agree that the Nazi Party was a homosexual movement. Mm-hmm. Let's agree that everybody in the higher rankings of the Nazi Party was homosexuals. Mm-hmm. And let's agree that even the deaths of homosexuals were not as great as the Jews, or the Jewish people, which I think we already do,
yeah.
In terms of numbers, mm-hmm. Not in terms of the fact that lives were lost and lives were lost. And let's go ahead and say that a lot of it was politically motivated and not just because they were homosexuals, but because of some sort of weird conspiracy. All of that in mind, that still does not apply to modern homosexuals. That still has no bearing whatsoever on gay people today.
Right, on today's gay agenda,
right.
the way they talk
right.
about it.
That has, just because, like, even using, first of all, I think they grossly over-exaggerate how much the gay agenda is built on the Nazi Party. Because as far as I'm aware, being a gay and all the meetings that I've gone to for the agenda, we've discussed more extensively the 50s than we have our death at the hands of the Nazis. Because also that was a Germany issue. Like, that's not an when homosexuals fight for rights in America, we reference our history in America. Mm-hmm. We're not going to go, we have a bad history in America. Look at the Nazis did to us. It's
well,
like,
now,
well, that wasn't
know,
us.
But what they believe is that the success of the gay movement relies on public sympathy. They
right.
believe that you
Which
need the public sympathy, and so you need to represent yourself as victims of the Holocaust because that is the most horrifying thing that we can reference.
It does rely on public empathy, but we have enough of
well,
that.
No, that's different.
It's sympathy and empathy, yeah, right.
Absolutely,
but, okay, but
because that is the point I disagree with, is that they believe that we will only
yeah.
give rights to gay people when we feel bad enough for them. No, I truly believe we'll only restore rights to gay people when we realize they are us and we are them.
Right.
And that the empathy is what
yeah, that was, that
success
was a vocabulary.
Of a movement is key and sympathy. No, no.
Well, okay, and
but that's the whole point of writing this book.
So,
don't feel sorry for them. They weren't really
to cede more rhetorical ground to them, though. Even if we did rely on public sympathy, we still have enough of that from what has actually happened. Like, even now. Like, events that have happened in my lifetime are enough to go, hey. I mean, people are still getting lynched for being gay. People are still, like, we're still having huge problems. I mean, the whole Matthew Shepard case,
yeah,
that was within my lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, I can't, like, just hang out at Wrigleyville because something might happen. You know, you... to say that, like, our only point of sympathy to cede the rhetorical ground that we require sympathy comes from the Nazi party and nothing else is ludicrous.
Well, and also as a kind of a counter to that argument about the gay movement kind of using the Nazis, actually, the anti-gay movement kind of uses, you know, some of the some of what the Nazis did. There's a one of I watched in kind of reading this book and getting ready for the podcast. I watched one of the documentaries, unquote, that the Nazis made about Jewish people. One of them's on YouTube.
Roger went down the rabbit hole.
I did. What's it called? This one was called The Eternal Jew.
Oh, yeah.
From 1940. Yeah. And I looked for Scott Lively and his group made a documentary called... I can't remember what it was called, but it was I think it was called The Gay Agenda. And I couldn't find a video of that, but I found some things where people talked about what was in it.
Okay.
And they used some of the same techniques that the Nazis used in their propaganda movies, like making the Jews, or in this case, the homosexuals, look way more powerful than they are.
Right.
Like, that was one thing the Nazis did.
Oh, the whole Mein Kampf thing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so that's really where you're using some of the same techniques that Nazis used to demonize, you know,
right.
to demonize
they
make,
the Jews. They make us seem like we have a lot more, we have a lot more power and control.
That's
because,
right.
I mean, like, that's ludicrous.
Yeah, that
everybody
important.
Has a chest of treasure that they keep in their closet, right?
Yeah,
like, everybody's just got gold doubloons. Everybody gets a call from the president every morning saying hello and is there anything I can do for you, right? We all get that. I have no more power than anybody else does.
So what is going on with these people that they feel so disenfranchised that's important for them to know that there are evil people out there with an agenda against them? What is that what we're supposed to think? Is that only really underprivileged, disenfranchised people would cling to such a hateful belief? What?
It's interesting. It's actually... I went through the Amazon reviews on this book. And you know how most reviews, if most books on Amazon, if you look at the reviews of them and the number of stars, it's for the average book, it's a bell-shaped curve, mm-hmm. right? It's like a few fives and ones, a few twos and fours, and a lot of threes, a bell-shaped curve. This book has almost exactly an upside-down bell-shaped curve. I actually wrote the numbers down because they were so intriguing. There are 32 five-star reviews, 32 one-star reviews.
Unbelievable.
And then like five or six total other reviews. Mm. Like, that's how polarizing this book is. And it's so true. It's kind of like whatever you think going into reading this book, you're going to be supported.
Right.
In reading this book.
Of course, and I knew that,
you know?
And I wondered, so why am I reading this
and,
book?
Well, and if I can give you some hope, Chris.
Please.
The majority of people who go on these books on Amazon and leave positive reviews like that are being asked to or feel compelled to, not because of their enjoyment of the book, although they do enjoy the book, but they will do it. If you look at any book that's written by like a KKK member or is like positively or in favor of something that's supported by the KKK, those groups will go and support the book on Amazon and just shout down anybody who disagrees with it in order to bury one-star reviews. And frankly, I'm surprised that there are equal one-star and five-star reviews, because usually they're better about burying one-star reviews with just amounts of five-star reviews.
Right.
So, I mean...
Okay, well, now, how do I wash my hands? Do I take a lesbian to dinner? Or is that just patronizing?
No, because they had nothing to do with this.
That's true. Okay.
You have to take an effeminate gay man from the 40s.
Okay.
Out to dinner.
I don't know what do I do as
or
a human being?
Or maybe a butch gay man from the 40s out to dinner.
Take three gay men from the 40s of indiscriminate butch and feminist.
I don't know what to do now as a human person who's read this book and seen these views. How do I move on? How do I go back out into my world and live? Boy, that sounds really heavy.
No, but I mean that's what we're dealing with.
Right.
You can take it for what it is. You can take it two ways, and Ranjan, I'm sure you'll have some. From my perspective, you take it in two ways. You take it as an educational exercise, which it is. You understand that in Louisiana right now, they just passed a bunch of things into the school system that make the exact same arguments in textbooks. Mm-hmm. Like, there is a textbook in Louisiana right now that they have at schools where our children are learning that says that Africa needs God, needs Christianity in order to get out of the problems it's having, and that slaveholders were nice people, and that the KKK for the most part was an upstanding organization that just wanted to better society. These are actual books, I mean like textbooks with this information
okay,
in there.
Okay, so we acknowledge these things are still a part of our today
and yes,
society.
And you move forward. It's my problem with people who talk about America as a large disparaging group. Mm-hmm. You know those people, I'm sure we all do.
Sure.
Those people who go, oh, well, yeah, America is just full of stupid people.
Well,
yeah,
we all work in comedy. You see that
right,
all the time.
Right.
In stand-up.
And it's not.
You know?
And that's the problem is, I forget who said it. It's a philosopher. I'm terrible. But evil exists because good men do nothing. Mm-hmm. When you start giving up, because, oh, well, the country is just ruined. Britain has people that live in Liverpool, Manchester, London. They have chavs. They have terrible people, you know, the most backwards redneck people you can think of. Not to say that all redneck people are backwards, but that kind of that ignorant people exist in Britain. The only difference is that they are they're not allowed to grasp control, and B, they have a smaller population. We're dealing with 300 million people, mm-hmm. and we've got a lot of, and we're a louder country than Britain in general. You need people that are willing to just be dicks about the positive side sometimes. Mm. You need assholes on the good side. Because if not, then you have the good people being polite, and then the bad people just get to shout all over the place, and then they're the ones that are heard.
Right, the good people are going around giving credit
Right. We see rhetorical ground to everybody, and we just don't care.
In fact, the authors of this book won today.
They did.
They won five credits to one.
Chris will provide an addendum where she will list all of the things that they didn't get credit for.
I'm going to go home and record another 3 hours of my thoughts on this book. I would really like to know how Ranjit is going to move on after having experienced this literary trauma.
Yeah, it was tough for me too. I had a tough time reading this book. The one thing I would say to you, Chris, is this is the price of living in a country where there's freedom of the press, freedom of thought, freedom of religion, freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there are countries where, you know, you're not allowed to publish stuff that, you know, that would be outrageous like this. And so it's kind of cool
Britain
that we
won't even
live,
let you put this on Twitter.
You know? Yeah. I mean, so I know you're not saying, Chris, that they shouldn't have had the right to publish this. I realize that it's not what you're saying.
Right.
But the way I look at it, it's like their right to publish this bullshit, which is what this book is. I fully support that, and I live in a place where they're allowed to publish it.
It's that quote that's incorrectly attributed to Voltaire. I don't agree with what you say, but I'll defend my death. You're right to say it.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So that was not Voltaire?
That was not Voltaire. It was written to him in a letter by another person who's not as popular.
Who was probably gay.
Not as
I'm
cool.
pretty sure
he was a Nazi. He was a gay Nazi.
There was no evidence they actually had homosexual relationships, but the letter used the familiar form of the pronoun tu instead of vous in French, and so they were probably kissing.
Probably gay.
They were probably behind a gay club
Lively
in the alley.
They have a very sensitive gaydar. Abrams.
They're better at picking up on homosexuals than I am. Like, I'll get hit on at a club by a guy, and I'll still think he's straight. That's, like, they're good.
Their gaydar is like dog's hearing. tones that the rest of us can't even see. Oh, they register man. On
nope,
their
yeah,
gaydar.
Nope, just not getting that.
So do we want to read any reviews before we
I'd love to hear them, yeah.
Here's one I liked. This was a 1-star review. All these are 5s and 1s just because that was the majority of them.
Right, and those are also the better ones usually.
Yeah. Here's another hate group trying to blame the Holocaust on homosexuals. At least they didn't try to pin it on the Jews. Pretty nicely done. Nicely done, Matt.
This book should be required reading in college to counteract the misinformation spewed out by the homosexual mafia.
There's a homosexual mafia?
There is. I have not been able to gain membership in it because I have not been able to break enough Manolo Blahniks as some sort of like capital gain that I have to get on people. Because usually what you do is you walk into a designer shoe store and you tell them, if you don't give me 10% of your profits, I am going to destroy these Jimmy Choos. And they go, please don't. No, take this money. And then you, I have not been able to do that.
Oh, I thought you would have to have a sponsor to bring you into the homosexual mafia to vouch for you.
I do have a sponsor, but they are not on Bravo television and therefore it doesn't count. You're only allowed, they have to be a celebrity on Bravo. My current sponsor right now is, Rip Taylor is my current sponsor right now. And so, unfortunately, Rip Taylor has not been on Bravo in a while, and so it's not working out well. But I get lots of confetti, and that's what matters.
Now, what does it take to get made in the homosexual mafia?
Usually, you have to get a makeover. And then you go off on a vacation to some sort of tropical island, and then you bang a cabana boy.
Yeah,
that's
see,
usually
you know,
how it happens.
I have a feeling this homosexual mafia once again excludes all lesbians.
Yes, but the lesbian mafia, they own all of the U-Haul in America, and also build the best lamps.
That what?
Oh, okay. So you didn't call me out on any of the gay male stereotyping that I did, but the minute I mentioned any of the broadest lesbian stereotyping, suddenly I'm an evil fascist male. All right, I see how this works out.
My favorite thing about that though was how you said all of the U-Haul. Like the plural of U-Haul is U-Haul. It's like a thing.
It? Well, because I didn't want to say all of the U-Hauls, because then that would just sound like they owned all the trucks.
So all of the U-Haul. It's like freedom, liberty, U-Haul.
God bless U-Haul. Yeah. All right. I see what Chris Simmons' agenda is. I look forward.
I've admitted from the beginning.
I look forward to reading your book, The Cody Swastika, How Cody Melcher Doesn't Like Lesbians. All right. Let's just wrap it up. I think that's a good point right now.
Yeah, Chris, do you have any gigs coming up you want to plug?
Anything you want to plug? Yeah.
I do, but I don't want this to be taken the wrong way. It's at a sex shop.
Wait, what's the wrong way to take it?
No, take this only the right way.
Okay.
Only the right way.
Okay, I'm going to do my best.
There's just so much discussion about homosexuality as perversion in this book. But perversion, I guess I'm going to talk about a commercial aspect of perversion. This sex shop is called The Pleasure Chest. There's a comedy show there called Performance Anxiety, held at the Pleasure Chest. I'm going to be performing in that show on October 15th.
Here's my question. The Pleasure Chest.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a chest full of pleasure? Or is it like when your breasts are tender and then they get nibbled a little? And by breasts, I mean even male nipples. And they get nibbled a little and it's like, oh, pleasure chest. My chest is pleasurable.
You know, it's funny, when I've been in the shop before, which is just a beautiful place, there've been very, very little focus on things above the waist.
All right, then I'm going to go with it is a chest full
chest
of pleasure.
Pleasure.
All
yes.
Right. Does it, like, if you open it, do you get all the U-Haul?
All the U-Haul contains.
Is in this
all
chest.
All the U-Haul you can eat.
I hope we get a sponsorship from either U-Haul or Pleasure Chest out of this.
It's
we can
a
really
U-Haul
use it.
Buffet.
Do you have any other shows coming up? Maybe a showcase in Evanston?
You know, this showcase in Evanston is incredible. It is every Thursday night. It's called Double Shot Showcase because we hold it in the coffee shop.
JJ Java.
Relax, JJ Java on Foster Street in Evanston.
Fantastic.
Who hosts that, Chris?
There are three hosts. Vest, hat, and comfortable shoes.
That is what we go by. It switches around depending on wardrobe. Yeah, it's a good time.
I'm comfortable shoes because I'm a homosexualist.
Yes. Mm. And I'm uncomfortable shoes because I'm a homosexual. See, again, she laughs at the male stereotyping. But if I had said anything about lamps or Home Depot, I'd be in trouble. All right. Well, let's go ahead and bring this one to a close. As I said at the top of the show, if you guys and ladies and other people who are listening to this show, now I'm just really conscious about everything I say.
I know.
This is why I don't leave my house. If you the masses listening to this podcast would be ever so kind as to go and rate us on iTunes, tell your friends if you enjoy the show. I know this one got a little heavy, but I hope you continue to enjoy our show. Feel free to talk to us on Facebook and Twitter. We're at Tomefoolery on Twitter, facebook.com/tomefoolery. We're on tomefoolery.com. And we are also we're just available all over the place. You can email us. We'd like to hear some feedback. Please tell your friends. And on iTunes, we'd really appreciate rating, just because that kind of gets the word out on iTunes a little bit more. And we want to grow this podcast so that it's better for you guys, if you like the podcast
or other.
Yeah. Anybody who likes the podcast,
we
want to make
Venn
it better
diagram,
for you.
Okay? All sections of that Venn diagram.
Yes, everybody, all people, everybody in the club getting tipsy. Runjit, do you have anything else you wanted to say?
No.
Reading next month?
Next month.
We need to prepare the people for the story that we are reading this coming month.
Yes, one of my favorite authors, H.P. Lovecraft.
Yes.
We're going to be reading The Shadow Over Innsmouth, or The Shadow of Innsmouth.
Just look for Shadow at Innsmouth and extreme racism, and that will be it.
That will be our Halloween edition.
And that will come out, we'll be releasing that the Sunday before Halloween.
Yeah.
So be sure to play it loudly on speakers for trick-or-treaters when they come up, so that they can learn about the horrors of the early 1900s. This has been Tomefoolery. We hope you would come back, and we hope that you have become more knowledgeable about Nazis. I, of course, am Cody Melcher.
And I'm Runjit Sauri.
And I'm Chris Simmons.
Thanks again for coming out, Chris. All right, take care and have fun. Bye.
Enjoy.
To show how much I love you, darling, I would shoot the mayor. They'd lock me in a psycho ward, but I wouldn't care. I'd stroll into the courtroom in my straitjacket and tie. And when they put me on the stand, here's what I'd testify. I'd say, I'm crazy, crazy, crazy. I'm crazy, crazy, crazy. I'm crazy, crazy, crazy about you.
This book doesn't deserve to be called garbage. Garbage once had some value.
Ah, yeah.
That's a good Amazon review.
Nice.